Several House Republicans unveiled a legislative proposal last month to create a federal paid leave policy that would be covered by employers. We'll talk about it this hour on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This would be the first ever federal paid leave act. The bill currently is in committee. It would also encourage companies to allow for flexible work arrangements like job sharing or working remotely. But the National Partnership for Women and Families is not on board. This bill would exempt employers who offer certain amounts of paid time off from complying with state paid leave laws that are now in the books in 8 states. And employers could deny the use of the paid leave when it disrupts business operations. Elise Gold is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. She researches wages, poverty, inequality, economic mobility, and healthcare. She's co-author of The State of Working America, 12th edition. And she graduated from UW-Madison with a doctorate in economics. Elise, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, let's start by exploring the prevalence of paid sick time in America. What percentage of workers is eligible for it?
That's a great place to start. You know, when we look at what is happening with paid sick days across the country, that some workers have it, are much more likely to have it than others, because some states have and localities have enacted paid sick days, so those workers have protections, whereas a lot of workers across the country really don't. And what we see is that high-wage workers are 3 times more likely to have it than low-wage workers. And so the overall incidence sort of masks that there are very vast differences across the country.
And you study this longitudinally in the long term. What does the year-over-year increase tell you about the context of what decisions are making about paid sick leave in companies?
What we're seeing so far is that over the last few years, just very recently, a diverse coalition of working people, advocates, business leaders, lawmakers across the country in 8 states and 32 localities have passed paid sick leave, paid sick time legislation. And what that means is that workers can earn paid sick days. You know, the longer they work, they can earn those hours and they can use them to care for themselves, for their family. And what that means is that you're going to see a rise in those places that have passed those laws, and you do. You see it in the data, in the Bureau of Labor Statistics data out there. You can see that there have been actually a significant rise in the number of people that are covered.
So does this legislation undercut that momentum?
Yes, to some extent it does, absolutely. So this legislation, which has been termed sort of work flex, it's actually about giving employers, not employees, new rights. Employers already can offer flexibility to their employees, right? They have a lot of leeway in terms of providing the flexibility that they might want to give them, in terms of scheduling, in terms of overtime, in terms of providing a minimum wage, in terms of giving all sorts of workplace benefits and protections to their workers. So those things already exist. What this does is it actually gives employers new rights to avoid their obligations under state and local paid sick days and paid family leave laws. It also has some provisions to give them the right not to pay overtime. So there's other conditions in this as well. But it really undermines stronger labor standards passed at the local level.
Big business organizations are coming out in favor of this measure. Is that because they realize what you say, that paid sick time is crucial? Or
well,
is something else going on?
Right. To some extent, businesses do recognize it, right? So, and that's why many businesses have been offering it. So even if there has not been a state or local law, many businesses have taken it upon themselves. Just like paying higher wages than the minimum wage, businesses find that profitable, find that they can get a more productive workforce. The same is true for standards, labor standards like paid sick days. They know that they want to have workers that come into work healthy, and they want them to be focused and not worried about their sick family members. They don't want to spread contagious diseases, right? They want to be able to stay home and take care of themselves, and so they don't have to replace workers who are sick. There's a lot of turnover in many industries, and to be able to have workers that are committed to their job. And paid sick days is one way you can do that. You provide that basic labor standard, and your workers are going to be more productive for you. And so businesses recognize that, and they already do that. What this law does is it It sort of conflates vacation time and sick time, different types of leave that employers might offer, and it gives employers the ability to say no to employees when they're sick and need to take a sick day, when they have a doctor's appointment. It gives employers that right to say no, undermining those local laws that have been fought for so hard.
If you're just joining us, we're with Elise Gould. She is a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, where she researches wages, poverty, inequality, economic mobility, and health care. We're talking about a new bill that was introduced last month that would be a first ever federal paid leave act, and we're discussing the ramifications of that act. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you get paid sick leave where you work? Are you a business owner? Do you think it's a good policy to offer paid sick leave, or is it not your responsibility when a worker falls ill? Can you afford to offer earned paid sick leave to employees? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elise, some 40 states and local governments require companies let employees earn paid sick leave. How do these rules compare to the federal proposal?
Well, the federal proposal is much weaker than what many states and localities do already. And as I said, it really gives employers new rights to be able to say no to employees who really need to take that paid sick time. And I think it's important to, since we have these state-level ordinances, local ordinances that have given employees these rights, this labor standard, it's important to take a look at those and see what that has really meant for businesses, workers, and communities. And I think that the evidence is very clear that allowing workers to earn sick time is a wise investment for employers, workers, and the general public. I mean, when you think about the general public, people think, well, what does that matter? Well, you think about workers, let's say, in the restaurant industry who don't have paid sick days, and they go to work sick, and there are many cases of spreading contagious diseases. I don't think anyone would want that. So that's very important for public health. Obviously, if your child is sick and you don't have paid sick days to be able to go and take care of your child, you go to work, you send your kid to school sick, and that spreads illness as well to other children, to their families, to teachers. And I think, you know, that is a bad sign for the general public. But I think it's also important to think about what is this meant for businesses. There have been studies that showed that there's been a lot of productive time lost due to health conditions. It costs employers a lot of money every year. If they don't offer paid sick days and workers come to work sick, they can spread disease to the other workers, let alone customers. And that is really important. And there have been, you know, many concerns oftentimes in localities and states that there'll be a problem with business climate or job creation. But the evidence from places that have passed paid sick days legislation is that those have not been realized. Those concerns have not been realized at all.
Elise, this bill was developed in conjunction with the Society for Human Resource Management, and it was aimed to fix this kind of patchwork of laws and rules that can vary state to state, and for some businesses that work across a number of states, across state lines, that this is supposed to smooth everything out. What about that reasoning?
Well, I think absolutely. What has happened is that states and localities have acted in lieu of federal legislation. You're seeing something similar with the minimum wage. We've had federal inaction on raising the minimum wage for many years, and because of that, many states and localities have acted independently and have tried to raise the minimum wage, recognizing that workers need to have a minimum standard to be able to afford a decent standard of living. Many minimum wage laws, you know, can help substantially reduce poverty in areas. And so it's similar to that. Absolutely, it would be great to have strong federal legislation that would provide this benefit across the country. What we don't need is to have federal legislation that weakens what state and localities have already gotten for their workers, for their communities, for the families that they serve.
Oh, so like a company that is already offering paid sick leave, this bill might be weaker than what the company is already doing. So they could just kind of revert to a federal guideline.
Yes. So many businesses already offer it. They've decided that it's good for their employees. It's good for their business. So they're doing that. So they may be doing it regardless of whether or not there's a law. But for some companies that are doing it just to satisfy some state or local legislation and they want to go around that, then they would use this federal legislation to say, oh, I'm providing the minimum. Now I don't have to follow what my state and local laws are telling me to do.
We're with Elise Gould. She is a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, a co-author of The State of Working America, 12th edition, talking about the Work Flex in the 21st Century Act that was introduced last month. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you get paid sick leave where you work? Are you interested in getting it? Do you think this bill would do good or not? 800-642-1234. Back after this news. It's a bill as a way to promote workplace flexibility and paid family leave. We're talking about the Work Flex in the 21st Century Act on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Elise Gould stays with us. She is a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, where she researches wages, poverty, inequality, economic mobility, and health care. You can join in as well. Did you have a job in the past that didn't offer paid time off? How did that change the way you handled getting sick or caring for a family member who was sick? 800-642-1234. Let's hear about the choices you have made or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Kenneth, who joins us from Janesville. Hi, Kenneth.
Hello. Good morning. I was wondering, and then employers will say, you know, we won't give you sick leave, but we'll pay you a few more cents, 2 cents an hour more or whatever. And my question is, are workers benefiting monetarily now more than they were 30 years ago? And I have a second question.
Elise, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. Are workers benefiting more monetarily today than they were 30 years ago? So there's a lot in that question. So when you think about how much workers get, I think that people initially will think about what their wages are. And what we have seen broadly over the last three decades, four decades even, is that the economy has continued to grow. We have expanded and we have become more productive as a workforce. Unfortunately, what has happened over the last 35, 40 years is much of that growing productivity, much of that growing economy has gone to the top 1% and has not gone to typical workers' wages. Typical workers' wages or compensation. And so when we think about how much workers are earning, how much they're able to afford, for their families, much of that has stagnated over the last 30, 40 years. And so whereas in the three decades following World War II, we saw a growing economy translate into increasing living standards and working families doing better and better each year, and you saw the next generation doing better than the generation before, we have been at a time now where a growing economy has not translated into typical increases in wages and compensation and in living standards for many people. And so that is where many people think about what has been going on with growing inequality and how people are really making ends meet. It's become increasingly difficult.
Kenneth, you have a follow-up? We could try that.
Yes. Isn't the United States lacking a labor policy? And I forget, in the 1960s, there was some talk about it and during a political election about having a section of the government devoted to workers, like they do in other countries. And aren't we lacking in our a consistent policy for workers?
Yes, I think that you're making an excellent point. I think that when we look at how well we have labor protections in this country compared to many of our peer nations across the world, we do not have the same labor protections. And I think that paid sick time is a great example. We are, you know, one of the only countries in the developed world that does not provide that basic labor standard for its workers. And so while in other countries workers have a guarantee of the ability to earn paid sick time as they work for their employer, that is not true by and large in this country. Over a third of private sector workers in this country do not have access to earn paid sick days from their employer. And that means that 37 million private sector workers in this country still cannot earn a single paid sick day. And so, yes, absolutely, we don't have those protections in this country. We could do a lot more.
Kenneth, thanks so much for calling in. Elise, you could say that if you really want paid sick leave, you should simply find a job that offers it. Don't take a job that doesn't give you sick days with pay. How does that resonate with you?
Well, I think that's, you know, it's really a great point when you think about if you're in a strong economy and you have the skills that are demanded of you and you are living in a local labor market that that rewards the you know, what you bring to the table, and you have the ability to quit your job and find a better one. Certainly in a stronger economy, people have more choices. Workers have those options. When you're in a weaker economy with a high unemployment rate, when there are many workers sidelined, and the employer knows that and the worker knows that, then the employer really, I would say, holds the cards in that relationship and can dictate the terms of that contract and can decide how much to pay and what types of benefits to provide in a way that workers really have very little power. Today, what we're seeing is an economy across the country. It's different. There's different stories across the country, absolutely. But what we have seen since the deepness of the Great Recession is that many states have been doing much better, but there is still some weakness, and you don't see workers quitting at the rate that they might in a stronger economy to find a job that's a better match for them, to find a job that has higher wages, to find a job that has the benefits that they really need and want.
There are nuances about this bill, and for instance, the group, the National Partnership for Women and Families, is absolutely not on board with this bill. There's this one piece of it that says that the use of the paid leave, employers can deny the worker who wants to use the paid leave when it disrupts business operations. What are some of the nuances you're seeing in this bill that would cause a group like the National Partnership for Women and Families to say, no, this is not the right thing here?
Right. I think that when you think about a group that's been advocating for paid sick days across the country for a long time to come out against the federal bill, I think, you know, we should definitely have pause and think, okay, what are they seeing? And I think that they are absolutely right, that there is some deception involved in this bill that looks like you're providing more flexibility and more benefits to workers. And what it really does is it provides more benefits to employers to be able to say no to their workers and deny them their ability to be able to take the paid sick days they've earned when they actually need it. So when you have that doctor's appointment, when your kid is sick, the businesses are going to be given a lot of rights to be able to deny them their ability to take that time off. And so that's really a problem for workers who need to be able to have that, to care for themselves, to care for their family members, to have preventative care, all of their needs out there around paid sick days.
So if only a dozen or so places demand businesses offer paid time off for illness, isn't a federal mandate better than nothing? Setting some groundwork that is unified across the country that can be applied as a whole, shouldn't that be a positive step?
Yes, I think that if we had federal legislation that was providing a strong protection, that would be preferable to a patchwork. Absolutely. But the problem is that this undermines much progress that has been made at the state and local level. It undermines the rights that workers have been given, and it actually gives employers a free pass to ignore those state and local laws that attempt to raise the bar on paid leave protections.
Is there a simple way to rework this bill to make it more what it is supposed to be meant to do, which is to help workers get the sick leave and get the flexibility? Can you rework this bill in a way that employers would agree to?
I think I can appreciate your generous interpretation of their intention. I'm not sure that their intention was to give workers those protections as opposed to giving employers the flexibility to bypass state and local legislation. Mm. I think, unfortunately, it's coming from a place that is, more underhanded and is not actually about giving workers more rights, but about giving employers new rights in terms of undermining some of those hard-fought rights that workers have gotten at the state and local level.
We're talking right now with Elise Gould. She is a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. She's a co-author of The State of Working America, 12th edition, talking about the Work Flex in the 21st Century Act that would let businesses opt out of state and local laws in favor of a universal paid leave benefit and a flexible time option. This bill is in committee. You can join in the conversation. Do you get paid sick leave where you work? Are you a business owner? Do you think it's a good policy to offer paid sick leave? Or is it not your responsibility? Can your business afford to offer paid sick leave? Is this about affordability? Join in or post 800-642-1234. Elise, so how does it work for government employees? Because government employees have protections. How would this bill impact state workers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've thought more about the private sector issue. It certainly could have impacts. I think it's important to remember that businesses and employers of all types, right, can still provide this doesn't limit businesses to do more. The same is true of all the laws at the local level and at state levels, that businesses, it's a minimum standard, and businesses and government employees can all do more. And I think it's useful to, again, when we're thinking about what the business case might be for this, I think it's important to look at what has happened in the local level and the state level and what that has meant. So while businesses may say this is going to be harmful for growth, the evidence suggests that many of them actually wind up coming out in favor after the legislation gets passed, and fears that the law would impede job growth were never realized. We saw that in San Francisco, which was the first jurisdiction to set a paid sick day standard. That was back in 2007. And if you look at the years after its implementation, San Francisco's job growth was even faster in sectors where you would have been seen that small businesses would have been more impacted, businesses that would be more vulnerable to additional costs, so things like the food service and hospitality sector, you actually see that their job growth was faster there.
Hmm.
You look at the first state, Connecticut, is the first state to enact a paid sick day standard, and that was back in 2011. And while many would say that the costs were going to be very small, businesses still expressed many concerns about how they were going to be able to pay for this. The fact is that they were able to absorb any additional costs through small changes in other forms of compensation, hours, prices, profits. They're able to reduce turnover and have higher productivity because of it. And so some research that was shown a couple of years after that is that more than three-quarters of employers expressed support for the law, and it really brought paid sick days to a large number of workers. This is, at very little cost to businesses. And so I think that many of the concerns, particularly for small businesses, for many lower-wage businesses, is that they're going to have a hard time with productivity and profitability, I should say. And, in fact, they are seeing great returns and very little cost. So I think, looking at those, since we've had those in effect, can be very useful in terms of evidence as to showing how this can have a positive impact on communities, on businesses, on families.
Governor Scott Walker has said in recent years, patchwork government mandates stifle job creation and economic opportunity. He also has said that removing a barrier to creating 250,000 jobs in private industry, he says it's impossible to provide all employees paid sick time. It costs too much money. Can you unpack the approach that Governor Walker is taking here?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we're not seeing evidence of that anywhere in the country. When we see where paid sick days has been passed and enacted, there has been no problem with job growth. I don't see that in the data anywhere, and I've been looking at this pretty carefully. I haven't seen that. I haven't seen any studies that have shown that. You look at places like D.C. that have passed it. You look at places like New York City. New York City, that 2 years after that law was passed, it was supported by 86% of employers, and about 85% reported the law had no effect on business costs while providing an additional 1.4 million workers with paid sick days. So these are huge benefits to workers and their families, and you're lowering what is termed presenteeism, workers going to work sick, which is not something that employers really want because people are going to get sick. And that presenteeism has a cost for productivity. When workers go to work sick, they can have a contagious effect on workers, on customers, you know, particularly when you think about food service or childcare workers or workers that work with the elderly. You wouldn't want them going to work sick. It can also reduce turnover, right, because those workers are going to have more loyalty to their employer, and they're going to be able to keep their job. So it's really important, and it can be a benefit to businesses as well as workers, absolutely.
Let's bring in Keith now, who joins us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Keith.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's just the topic fits me just perfect here. I've worked enough where we get 10 paid sick days a year, and we can accumulate them up to 400 hours. And so I'm having a double knee replacement right now, next week exactly, and I've worked enough to get that off. So that's really beneficial for me. The only downside of having that is there's a handful of people where I work that go to the doctor. They seem to find a doctor where they have concerns like anxiety, or they come up with different excuses to get off, and then that really it's hard on other workers because you got to work overtime or something to fill their shoes. But for the most part, for the legitimate ones, it works really well. And the employers have to get the language so that they can make it make people accountable for what's going on. But I really like it. So.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for calling in. Elise, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Keith, I think it's great. I applaud your employer for providing those benefits, allowing you to accrue them, because when you have a surgery like the one you're talking about, you really cannot go to work. And so you need to be able to have that time off and being able to have that surgery and having that time to fully recover so you can return rejuvenated and healthy back to your employer. I think that's very important, and I'm so glad that you have that benefit.
Elise, how does paid sick leave kind of mix and mingle with maternity leave?
So paid sick days, we tend to think about is for recovering from sort of a common illness, right? So in the winter, you think about the flu, or caring for a child or a loved one who's ill. Also could be used for getting preventative care. And so a checkup or, going to the doctor when you need to have additional diagnostic tests or whatever it might be. That is what we think of. So it could be a few hours. It could be a half day or a day, a couple days to recover from sickness. When we think about things like maternity or paternity leave or paid family leave, those are for longer recovery times, longer time to care for a loved one or a child, a parent, a spouse. And those oftentimes, are going to take a longer time.
Elise Gould is with us. She is talking us through a new bill that is supposed to aim at giving workers more flexible options, paid sick leave. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Is this a good idea or not? We'll be back after a news update. The House Republicans who introduced the bill say it will create the nation's first federal comprehensive framework for workplace flexibility. The bill was developed in conjunction with the Society for Human Resource Management. It would amend the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, which currently does not guarantee a workplace flexibility option. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and we're digging into the legislation on this hour with Elise Gould. She is a senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute. Your thoughts on paid family leave? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Maybe you're looking for a new job right now. How does paid sick leave factor into your interest in a job? Will you apply somewhere if you know you don't earn paid time off? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Elise, do employers have an economic incentive to pay out for paid sick leave when an employee severs ties with a company or an organization?
Well, employers can have different contracts with their workers. They can have one that says that they pay out sick time, but oftentimes they don't. They're not required to pay out that paid sick time. They could have different requirements on what they do with their vacation time that's accrued. Maybe they pay out vacation time, but not paid sick time. Oftentimes, workers can carry over paid sick time from 1 year to the next. That allows them to take off more time if a serious illness comes up, or to cover what they need if they have a child. So I think that, you know, different employers have the flexibility to set up that benefit in different ways. I think that we've been talking a lot about how the costs to businesses are actually rather minimal, and many businesses have been supportive of laws that have passed in local areas. I think it's also really important to remember how this benefit is so important to workers themselves and their families, because without the ability to earn paid sick days, workers often have to choose between going to work sick or sending a child to school sick and losing their much-needed pay. And that pay, you know, can help cover the cost of many important necessities that they have in their lives, not only be able to keep their job, but to be able to afford to pay for the things that they and their families need.
We hear reports that employees who do have paid time off, vacation days, paid sick leave, that they don't end up taking those benefits. They're concerned about their job, perhaps keeping their job. They're concerned about leaving their coworkers in a lurch. What about that aspect?
It is certainly the case that when it comes to paid sick days in particular, workers, by and large, do not take all of the days that have been offered to them. That is certainly the case. Workers, for the most part in this country, workers want to be productive members of society, want to be productive members of their workplace, and will take paid sick days only when they absolutely need it to care for themselves, to be able to go to a doctor's appointment, to take care of their child when they're sick, and that they leave a lot of those days on the table, really, because they simply don't need it. And so even if there is a law that guarantees 5 or 7, whatever number of days it is, many of those days are not actually taken, and those costs are not realized. However small those costs might be to businesses, they are really not realized. And workers knowing that they have those days if they need them really gives them peace of mind, gives them the kind of economic security that many workers and their families do not feel even today in these economic times.
Paul from Eau Claire emailed, and he writes, "What's wrong with being responsible and living below your means to save money to fund your own days off?" What would you say to Paul?
So whether or not many families can make those kinds of savings, that's an interesting sort of point to say that people, you would say that self-insure to be able to pay for that time off. Unfortunately, there are many low and moderate wage workers out there in this country that simply don't have the ability to save more than they are already saving to care for themselves, to care for their families, to pay for necessities. When we think about what it costs, you know, in terms of that much, losing much needed pay if they have to take a day off. And also they risk, if they have to take a day off, they risk losing their job. They don't have a protection that says that I have to take a sick day today because I'm sick or my kid is sick. The employer is not obligated, in places that don't have these protections, they're not obligated to let them keep their job. So it's not just losing that needed pay, but also losing that job. But if the cost of taking unpaid sick time can make a painful dent in what the worker can afford for their household. So if you think about workers without paid sick days, they make about, in the on the average, they make just under $50,000 a year. And you think about what kinds of costs they have. So comparing those types of wages to the data out there in terms of what people need to spend their money on, if you have to take, let's say, 2 days of unpaid sick time, that's roughly the equivalent of a month's worth of gas for the typical worker, and that would make it difficult for them to get to work. 3 days of unpaid sick time translates into a household's monthly utilities budget, you know, preventing a worker from paying for electricity and heat. So these dollars are very important that workers can lose and risk if they get sick.
We had a caller who joined us, couldn't stay with us. He said he works for the state of Wisconsin. He says the state workforce includes limited-term employees, and that means, he says, it's year-round work, full-time work, but they don't accrue sick leave or paid time off. So here is this person who works for the state but is not in a position to receive such benefits.
Yes, it's a problem when we think about what has happened to the workforce. There are many workers that are termed contract workers, or they could be misclassified, and they're not really seen as who their employer might be, and they're working on some sort of subcontract, and it could be for the government, it could be for the private sector, and they don't have those protections. That's why it is important to really get all those workers covered, those full-time workers who are committed to those jobs, for them to not be able to get these, you know, minimal labor standards, these minimal protections, I think is really devastating for a country such as ours.
Let's go to Colleen, who joins us from Darlington. Hi, Colleen.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say I was so thankful that I had sick time, and I got to use that to take care of my mother for her dying wish to be at home.
Mm. How long were you able to be away from work?
2 months.
2 months, and you were able
And actually, it saved everybody money because I was there 7/24. You know, so you don't have to pay people to come in and take care of her and, you know, medical and all this and that. It saves people money. And I just remember the day I went in and told her, I said, Mom, I'm going to be here to take care of her, take care of you. And that smile on her face was worth $1 million. She was ready for it, and she knew it.
Elise, go ahead.
Yeah, being able to have that paid family leave to take care of a loved one for a longer period of time, I'm so glad you had that opportunity. I'm so glad your employer saw to it to give you that benefit that you were able to earn working at that job, and that you were able to have that time. I think that's really a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing.
Elise, what about the Family Medical Leave Act? It guarantees a person's employment when taking a leave for extended illness. How would this bill interact with that act?
Oftentimes, we think about them separately. One is paid sick time for shorter-term illnesses for doctor's appointments. You know, it could be as little as a couple of hours in a given day. We think about FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act. You're talking about a longer-term illness. You're talking about caring for a new child. And those types of things are, you know, it's a longer-term situation. And I think that that's what the last caller was really talking about was family leave. Unfortunately, while the FMLA provides that job protection, it does not provide for pay. So even if you have that job protection, many families cannot afford to be able to take off that kind of time without pay, because then they can't pay their bills. So they might be able to be there, but they can't provide really for the necessities that they need to. And so many states and localities have also been trying to put forward some kind of a bill legislation to protect families in that instance. So California is a notable example. In California, there is a payroll tax that employees pay into, workers pay into, so that they can take that time off, that longer time off, with a certain amount of pay protection during that time when they have to care for themselves or a family member.
So what do you wish to see as far as federal legislation goes for paid sick leave? What would you wish to be put together in legislation and passed?
Well, I think that instead of this work flexibility type of legislation that is being discussed right now that really undermines workers' ability to take paid sick leave when they need it, that we should be looking at other legislation like the Healthy Families Act, which really establishes a true national paid sick days standard, and that respects the rights of states and cities to provide their own expanded protections. So really lifting up what has been happening at the state and local level and providing that across the board.
As you watch what happens to the Work Flex in the 21st Century Act, what are you watching for in this bill?
Well, I think we want the truth to come out about who is really getting the flexibility and how this is not really going to be providing a benefit that is useful to many workers and their families. And I think that's important. We don't want federal legislation that undermines the hard work that's happened, the gains that have been made at the state and local level for workers and their families.
Do you think it's going to get traction and get out of committee? I mean, what are lawmakers saying?
I really don't know. I really don't know where it's going right now. I certainly hope it doesn't get passed and undermine what has been happening at the local level. I think that that would be a problem, and that would be really a shame for many working people who need this benefit.
Did you see this coming? Has there been a lot of talk among businesses wanting, just an even keel way to enforce paid sick leave across the country?
Well, I think what we've seen in the last year is, and in fact longer than that, we've seen states trying to undermine what localities have done in terms of, let's say, passing a minimum wage legislation at your locality. The local legislators decide that that's what's important for their community, and state legislators come in and pass laws called preemption laws that undermine the ability of localities to do what they think is right. This is really doing that at a federal level and saying, okay, the federal government's now going to undermine what state and localities have decided is important for their communities.
Elise, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me and having this important conversation.
Elise Gold is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute, where she researches wages, poverty, inequality, economic mobility, and health care. She is a co-author of The State of Working America, 12th edition, and she graduated from UW-Madison with a PhD in economics. This hour of The Morning Show was produced by Keely Voltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.